Bassist and barber Papa John Joseph said it didn't matter that Bolden and his men didn't read. Bolden outplayed Robichaud's band, because he used to play them blues. Nobody could read in his band, and he used to kill Robichaud anywhere. What made his band different from country bands was more jazz to it. Donald Marquis, author of In Search of Buddy Bolden, notes that Lewis Jones, a friend who owned a barber shop where Bolden hung out, said that Bolden played both by note and by ear, and he liked to please the audience. Having a great ear, he could hear another band play, and after practicing their piece between dances, was able to duplicate it by the end of the evening. As he matured musically, he would listen to a number, memorize it instrument by instrument, and teach the parts to the others.
Pops Foster described the men in the Bolden band.
Brock Mumford was a guitar player. Brock had a barbershop at Cherokee and Ann Streets in the heart of what was called Niggertown. Most of the guys in Bolden's band were barbers. Willie Warner was on clarinet, and Frank Lewis played another one. And then Willie Cornish took over. Willie and I played with Freddie Keppard. None of the band could read. Frankie Dewson never played with the band, but he took it over and named it Eagle Band after Buddy blowed his top. Jim Johnson, the bass player, was a very good friend of mine, and I used to hang out with him all the time. He was an older guy than me. Jim liked working with the Bolden band and stayed with Bolden till he went crazy. Jim worked on the boats way late and was the last one of Bolden's band to die. In about 1957.
It was a music that had so little wisdom, you wanted to clean nearly every note he passed. Passed, it seemed, along the way as if traveling in a car. Passed before he even approached it and saw it properly. There was no control except the mood of his power. And it is for this reason it is good you never heard him play on recordings. If you never heard him play someplace where the weather, for instance, could change the next series of notes, then you should never have heard him at all. He was never recorded. He stayed away while others moved into wax history, electronic history. Those who said later that Bolden broke the path. It was just as important to watch him stretch and wheel around on the last notes, or to watch nerves jumping under the sweat of his head. But there was a discipline. It was just that we didn't understand. We thought he was formless, but I think now he was tormented by order, what was outside it. He tore apart the plot. See, his music was immediately on top of his own life, echoing. As if when he was playing, he was lost and hunting for the right accidental notes. You were moving so fast, it was unimportant to finish and clear everything. He'd be describing something in 27 ways. There was pain and gentleness, everything jammed into each number.
My Bucket's Got a Hole in It was the music there, and the last part was an excerpt from Michael Ondaatje's outstanding book about Buddy Bolden, entitled Coming Through Slaughter, the reader Peter Coyote. Well, there's a story behind My Bucket's Got a Hole in It. Beer in New Orleans at the turn of the century was sold in tin buckets. See, it mostly came from the tap, so kids were hired to run for beer, and they were called can rushers and brought the beer from the tap to wherever it was going to be consumed. So if you had a hole in your little tin bucket, you really couldn't get any beer. Bucket's Got a Hole in It was also one of the tunes that Bolden would play when he spotted friends or wanted to liven things up.